The Guardian.
World Cup, World Cup. Every 4 years it's the World Cup, World Cup. If you don't pick up a grunt straight in the build-up, then we'll love it when you score a goal.
Ooh, did you see that?
World Cup, World Cup. It might all end in tears or a headbutt. You can follow all the blogging on your laptop. From Slovenia to Slovakia, from Nigeria to the Cote d'Ivoire.
Ah, Cote d'Ivoire.
The Guardian and Observer, packed with World Cup coverage every day.
World Cup Daily Live with James Richardson on Guardian.co.uk.
Day 5 in the World Cup, and it's all kicking off. From New Zealand chasing Skirtle and FIFA chasing skirts, to Eboué and Ivory against the Portuguese, to the difference between Brazil and Alan Shearer. The answer, people like Brazil with a mic on. We get the reaction from South Africa, Lisbon and Wellington, and from listeners worldwide. And we look forward to Wednesday's action in South Africa, the return of Bafana Bafana, Chile and Spain. All of that and much, much more in World Cup Daily. Well, hello there, everybody, and welcome to another edition of World Cup Daily. Joining us here, Paolo Bandini.
Hello.
Hi, Paolo. And alongside him, as badly missed as a long shot with a Jabulani, it's Paul Doyle. Paul.
Hi, James.
It's been an extraordinary amount of time since you graced the pod.
Not to worry.
Indeed not. Indeed not. Have you been enjoying the tournament so far?
Not really.
No?
No, but I mean, it caught fire a little today at last, didn't it? But other than that, it's been a little underwhelming. But hey, it's the World Cup, and even when it's bad, it's good.
That's so well put. Paolo, mic on, did he mean it?
Absolutely, 110%. I've been having this debate already this evening on Twitter with various people. But I just think the argument against seems to be, oh, he looked up across goal and therefore it must have been a cross, which I don't see as a valid argument. I think he looks up. I think it's perfectly possible that even the angle he's looking at up, he can see in his peripheral vision the goalkeeper is off the line. The goalkeeper is off the line, and that's a big mistake. And he has hit shots like that before. Someone actually very kindly tweeted me just before I came in, which Paul, I think maybe now is about to say, because you're pointing at him, but a Brazil-Portugal game in 2008, I just watched the YouTube clip of it, very similar. And, you know, I just think he has every bit the confidence about him, Mike, on to try that sort of thing. And that's what you have to think about when you think about this situation is, first of all, you know, the angle, yes, it was very unlikely. But secondly, the character of the player. And Maicon's exactly the sort of player to have a shot there. And I don't think he would have hit the ball as hard as that if he was trying to cross it.
To put this in perspective, did Ronaldinho mean that goal in 2002?
Oh, that's... I think that one's much trickier. I think that one I'm much less certain of. But I think Maicon, honestly, I just don't think that he would strike the ball in the way that he does with the part of the foot that he does and with the power that he does if he isn't trying to shoot there.
Goal of the tournament so far?
Yes, off the top of my head, I'd say yes. And I agree with what Paolo said. And I think by looking up towards the centre, as if the cross could have been to further dupe the keeper.
Right, yeah. Not only did he score a brilliant goal, he sealed him a dummy while doing it.
I have to say, actually, pause the moment. We're going to swear we're going to wait a second, but the second goal was also phenomenal.
Yeah, that was a good goal, yeah.
Absolutely sensational pass from Ilana to Rubinho, raising the immediate question of, did Mark Hughes perhaps make a slight mistake in his evaluations of those two players?
Yeah. Yeah, indeed. Now, before we go any further with the day's talking points, of course, Brazil figuring heavily among them, let's just get a quick roundup of the world of football's news.
Bong!
Bad news for Rob Green's chances of an MLS move. TV audience for England against United States in the USA was an astounding 17 million Americans, bigger than the first four games of the NBA Finals.
Bong!
Elsewhere, snow has been forecast for England's next World Cup match, which is against Algeria in Cape Town on Friday. And there have been reports of a big freeze in the French camp too. Playmaker Yohan Gourcuff, sent to Coventry by the rest of the squad, led by Ribéry, Anelka and Henri. Gourcuff sparked further unrest by skipping team breakfast, says team captain Patrice Evra. To speak to Gourcuff, you have to talk to Jeremy Toulala. I never hear him.
Oh, he bon.
36 Dutch women were thrown out of the Holland-Denmark game on Monday for wearing orange dresses associated with a non-World Cup sponsoring beer brand. About 40 stewards surrounded us and forced us to leave the ground, said one of the models who'd been hired as part of a marketing campaign for Bavaria beer. Respond FIFA, this is a cynical ploy to earn headlines with a collection of eye-catching misses at a game. That's Emil Heskey's job. Now, Brazil-North Korea.
Brilliant Brazil goals, as we were saying. As much as anything, though, the story of this Tuesday night game was that North Korean team. Now, before it all kicked off, Paul, you were saying, just imagine if the dear leader had spent all these years cooking up a crack team of world-class footballers. And blow me, if that wasn't quite the story.
Yeah, they were extremely well organised, extremely dynamic, and very ambitious, which is, I mean, we've seen quite a lot of well-organised and well-drilled teams in this tournament so far, but not so many with the level of ambition that the Koreans had, although obviously it waned in periods when Brazil were quite dominant. But they were determined to score at every opportunity. They didn't have a huge amount of opportunities, but the goal they got towards the end was just reward for that enterprise, I thought. And it's interesting, actually. This, of course, for obvious reasons, has been billed as the African World Cup. But I think in this tournament so far, we've seen plenty to suggest that Asian teams may be overtaking the African teams. But South Korea were really impressive. I'd say that they're a stage ahead of their northern neighbours in their development, because in addition to being well organised and very fit, etc., their movement up front was very sophisticated and elusive. And Japan, of course, beat Cameroon, who are regulars in the tournament but have stagnated, really, or even gone backwards, which is a pity.
Yeah, indeed. Happy Goth says, DPRK are amazing. Drogba and Ronaldo must be bricking it, because having seen them in action, we'll come to their game in a second, you can see the Koreans getting out of the group.
I still think it would be a surprise. I think that they were very well organised. I think that what you know,
they were like Mourinho's Inter at the Nou Camp.
Yeah, I think it was interesting. Someone said this to me before the game, that they were not as sort of athletic as the South Korean team. I think that's true. They weren't sort of as obviously physically you know, so strong as the South Korean team, who were very impressive with their speed and athleticism. But the what they did have is incredible organisation. They were playing like a five-man defence, which you really don't see. It wasn't just like a three-man defence with two wing-backs. It was a proper five-man defence at the beginning of the game anyway. And, you know, it was, for the first 45 minutes, completely stymieing everything Brazil had. They really didn't create any chances in that time. And perhaps my concern with them getting to the late stages is that to get through, having lost one game, you'd imagine they're going to have to win a game. And I'm not sure they had enough attacking intent about them. I think they're going to be very frustrating for teams. I think that you may well find that they're capable of really restricting both Portugal and Ivory Coast. But I know they got their goal at the end. I'm not sure that they necessarily have enough going forward to get through the group.
Mm, all right.
They were very disciplined, but I think where Brazil fell down, and it wasn't an awful performance by Brazil, but the reason that they didn't infiltrate that well-drilled defence as often as they might have been expected to do, I think, was because their movement wasn't as inventive and beguiling as it could have been. And I think so far in the tournament, only Germany and South Korea have shown the level of movement that will be required.
I think Argentina as well. I think they wasted a lot of chances, although admittedly not against much of a defence.
Yeah, I forgot about them, actually. That's a good point.
Good point, pal. Well, a couple of, I mean, there are lots of positives for Brazil, and Robinho is sparking performance. The negatives are Kaká, who looked very short on confidence, apart from fitness questions. The other worrying thing for the Seleção, of course, Dunga's dress sense, which continues to cause consternation worldwide. Mook says Dunga looks remarkably like Christoph Lambert of Highlander fame, and I know what he means.
Did you see Barney's tweet?
No, he was. Barney, oh yeah, I did.
Barney described Dunga as looking like the slightly anxious skipper of a shark fishing boat on his first ever trip to a gay nightclub.
Yeah, that's very Barney Roney, though, isn't it? I wonder what the subtext
or
is.
Captain Haddock, as someone sent into.
Well, he didn't
MDM.
Look like Captain Haddock.
No, he was attired like him.
Well, he wasn't really. Was he? Well, all right.
Just delete that.
If you're interested in getting the Dunga look, he has previously sported one or two questionable designs by his own daughter. But this was the work of one Alexander Hrkovic, who was tweeting about it. In fact, his choice of coat was a really big talking point on all the Brazilian websites. Now, earlier on Tuesday, another surprising result, that 1-1 last-minute equaliser from New Zealand in their match against Slovakia. Winston Reid, dramatic injury time equaliser there. Extraordinary stuff. Barty posting in, what an amazing game. I don't know anybody here in New Zealand who didn't watch it despite kickoff being at 11:30 p.m. on a Monday. Winston Reid's become a national hero overnight, and in a rugby nation, the only sport on everyone's lips is football. Amazing. Well, to test the veracity of that, we've now dialed up our old friend Colin Peacock from Radio New Zealand. Colin, the morning after the night before, how are you?
Oh, well, I'm fine. I didn't get much sleep, but it was remarkable because I really didn't see it coming. Like a lot of people, I watched, you know, more in hope than expectation. And when they conceded early in the first half, you just couldn't see where they were going to get a goal from. They even looked tired, took off their veterans, and you just couldn't see it. And I have to admit, I'd actually given up. And at one point, I flipped over and watched the end of the Deer Hunter on another channel. But then went back to it, and of course, there was that amazing ending. And it's an absolute high point for New Zealand football, the first point in a World Cup, and you know, another step forward for New Zealand, which is fantastic. And it does enable people to shove it down the throat somewhat of those who said New Zealand didn't belong in the tournament.
And the Australians. Don't forget the Australians, Colin. By the way, end of the Deer Hunter, that was a penalty shootout and a half, wasn't it?
It was a bit, but I just happened to cross over almost at the point where Christopher Walken blew his brains out. And,
yes.
Having watched them kind of self-destructing a little bit on the field, I thought, oh, maybe that figures. But, I mean, the match really was meandering out, and it was a bit sad and sorry. But just to see them have that final fling and go at it, and it does show, I mean, of course it's great for New Zealand, but for the neutral who would have sat through that game and probably been not that thrilled by it, it just shows that teams that don't attack or sit on a 1-0 lead, are always up for punishment. So that was another good thing to come out of it.
Oh, absolutely. A lot of our listeners were saying how much they enjoy the game, actually. It was obviously a very different kind of football to maybe some of them were used to. But what was the reaction then in New Zealand? Is it, as Barty was suggesting, a result in a game which has caught the entire nation's imagination? And were there wild scenes in the streets of Wellington, etc., etc., etc.?
A lot of people kept on saying this thing of, oh, New Zealand, they're just happy to be there, which is true. And no one had great expectations. But, I mean, the really great thing about that result, and perhaps the reason it was celebrated more than the fact of it being the first ever point and so on, is the fact that even if they get torn apart by Italy in the next match, which could happen, they should be alive for their last one against Paraguay. So it would have been really disappointing to lose that one, be defeated by Italy, and the last one to be a bit of a dead rubber. So this at least gives them hope for the rest of it. And indeed, Italy coming up, they had a friendly against Italy when they went to the Confederations Cup last year, and they were leading them by 3-2 with, I think, only about 20 minutes left, and Lippi had to bring on Jaquinta and De Rossi and players like that in order to get them out of the hole. So a little bit of hope there even against Italy.
Colin, the other question I was wondering is, it did strike me there seemed to be a lot, certainly looked on TV like there were a lot of New Zealand fans there. I mean, are there actually a lot of people down there who really like football, or is it just that, you know, New Zealand fans will travel a long way to watch any sport?
There are more youngsters play football in this country than play rugby. It's definitely a sport on the rise. You know, we had the women's under-17 World Cup here, and even crowds turned out for that. So there is definitely an appetite for it.
Brilliant. Colin, nice one. And we'll speak to you when you get to the second round.
Okay, you're not going to get me in trouble with another sheep-based pun.
No. I think you're thinking of that.
I didn't notice because I didn't last time, and two newspapers
picked up on that. You're breaking up there, Colin.
I think you've already got yourself in trouble by saying New Zealand never won the Rugby World Cup.
Oh, yeah. Good point.
Colin, thank you so much for being with us.
Soft, strong, and very, very long. This is World Cup Daily with James Richardson.
Slasher says, by the way, the man who missed the header in the 88th minute was an ex-AFC Wimbledon striker, Shane Smeltz. He left AFC Wimbledon to go to Halifax Town, but the step up to the conference was a step too far. He only got 2 goals in 31 games, and there he is playing at the World Cup. Amazing, isn't it? Amazing. Anyway, now also on Tuesday, he said to Paul Doyle, who's looking less than amazed by that last little story, was, of course, Cote d'Ivoire against Portugal. Now, Paul, as a lover of the African game, how did you feel about the new Sven-Göran Eriksson-style Cote d'Ivoire?
It was very much as I'd expect from Sven.
Ah.
In fairness to him, Cote d'Ivoire's defence has been problematic in recent months, and in fact in recent years. You remember even at the last World Cup, in all three matches, they went 2-0 down in every game. But so we had them well organised, and there was a new solidity there at the expense of attacking Verve, I think. And I thought that as the game progressed and it emerged that Portugal perhaps weren't as good as he'd probably envisaged, I thought he could have adjusted his mindset a bit and they could have gone on the attack a bit more and gone for the victory, because I don't think a draw particularly suits them. It basically would come down to goal difference In fact, we could see that North Korea could even get a draw against one of those teams. So I think Portugal were there for the taking.
And that corner at the end very much typifying that. When it was the last kick of the game, they had a corner. You expected them to hoof it into the box and see if anyone could put it in the net. But instead, they just tapped it short and the referee blew the whistle. Very, very strange. Of course, Didier Drogba missing the first 65 minutes of that game. Drogba performing with a lightweight cast, which some of us have to do all the time, I have to say. But that'll be something which they'll hope to give them a lift in future fixtures.
It was actually, the start of the game, you had both Drogba and Simao, who are the top scorers for both teams, on the bench. So in some ways, you could say a 0-0 draw, perhaps a little predictable. But
Cristiano Ronaldo, he had the worst passing accuracy of any player in that game.
Absolutely, yeah. I was about to pull the same stat out, James, but you beat me to it. Yeah, I mean, you don't have Cristiano Ronaldo in your team necessarily for his passing accuracy. You have him in for...
He doesn't score goals either.
Well, this is the issue. You have him in there to make incisive runs and to score goals. Unfortunately, he hasn't scored a goal for Portugal in something like 2 years. So, this is the problem they're going to have. His was undoubtedly the best effort of the match. Yeah, he rattled one off the bar in the first half, and that was the best chance of the match, arguably, except perhaps that one at the end which Drogba sort of jabbed across goal. Unfortunately, you do sort of feel a bit like at the moment they need something special from him, and he hasn't shown that he can do that for them.
I'm curious to know what the reaction is in Portugal to the debut game and Cristiano Ronaldo's performance. Is there a Ronaldo backlash mounting, perhaps, there in Lisbon? Let's dial up Tom Condit from Portugal.net for some answers. Tom, hello there. How are things in Lisbon?
They're fine. A little bit of a depressed atmosphere given the game today, but apart from that, things aren't too bad.
Now, what is the mood about Carlos Queiroz's side and indeed about Cristiano Ronaldo? I mean, they're not the only team who've been a bit underwhelming in this opening phase, but is there any kind of dissatisfaction building towards Ronaldo and the side?
Well, Carlos Queiroz was very unpopular even before this tournament started. He really has got very few friends at all as the Portugal manager. And this game, I mean, I've just finished watching a lot of the analysis on the news, various news programmes, and basically they were just all laying into Queiroz, saying that he's got no charisma, he doesn't know how to get the team attacking, and basically giving him a very hard time.
Right. What is he doing wrong specifically? What is he not doing in terms of getting the team to attack?
Well, I think is, in my own personal opinion, Portugal just don't have the talent that they have had of recent years. You know, there's no players like Figo, like Rui Costa. There was always three or four of those players, the fabled golden generation in the Portuguese team over the last 10 years. At the moment, they've got Ronaldo. Arguably, their other world class players are Pep, Carvalho, and Pep's injured. And so, Ronaldo can't do it all on his own.
Tom, listen, just briefly then, finally, what are people calling for from Portugal's next match? Is there something they'd like to see Simão in from the start, or any kind of tactical change? Or...
Goals, I think that's what they really want.
They're overrated, don't you know?
Portugal, they've just had a misfiring attack for so long. Their defence has actually been brilliant. They've only conceded 3 goals in their last 16 matches. Problem is they can't score, can't put the ball in the net at the other end.
Looking forward to Portugal-North Korea then, Paul.
Yeah, do they have anyone who might replace Deco and bring a little bit of ingenuity to midfield that he wasn't able to provide today?
Yeah, well, that's the big problem. They had one of their main hopes for this World Cup was a player called Ruben Mikael, which is supposed to be the next Deco, plays for Porto, but he got injured shortly before the tournament. The other suggestion, some people are saying that Dani, the Zenit St. Petersburg forward, could play that role. But, he's a bit more of a winger, a bit more of a pacey attacker. Hasn't really got that creative passing of Deco. And so Portugal really just are relying on Deco and have to hope that he, his legs taken through, dragging through one last tournament.
Tom, thank you so much for that roundup, and enjoy the rest of the World Cup.
Thank you.
World Cup Daily Live with James Richardson on guardian.co.uk.
All very interesting. Tom Kundert there from Portugal.net. One or two posts from around the wide world of World Cup Daily. Gavin says, Riquelme to West Ham for exclamation marks and in block capitals. Get your money on Carlton Cole for top goal scorer next season. Is that going to happen?
Carlton Cole being top goal scorer next season.
Or Riquelme joining West Ham. It's all over the, you know, the various transfer market websites. It's an extraordinary move.
Yeah, I think a lot of things are said at this time of year, and I'm not saying that it isn't happening, but I think you often need to reserve judgment with these things until someone shows up at a training ground.
Osaka Chris says, Jimbo, not condoms on the heads of the Japanese, but bowling pins, of course, from round one bowling centre. Good.
Paul looked so brilliantly confused by that statement.
Well, there were these chaps kind of dressed up. Anyway, and I got confused. Unka has a fantastic post parodying the various conspiracy theories about the Adidas German axis of Jabulani evil. And very nicely worked that one. And Stug B22, Robbie Earl is gone for ticketing touting. Please tell me Shearer, Townsend, McCarthy, et al. Were also involved. It's a strange story, that one. Poor old Robbie Earl.
Yeah,
and how did he get 50 tickets on his allowance?
Yeah, I read it. There's a lot of questions about that story that you sort of feel like need answering. I think the shame is that he's actually one of ITV's better pundits, I'm going to say hesitantly, because
well,
now
he looks
around the room. But
I feel like
he's, you know, he's one of the sort of better members of that team, and it's a shame for them. You know, I guess it means more airtime. Maybe they can replace him with James Corden, just slot him straight into the main lineup and be done with it.
Now you're flirting with controversy. of course, the conspiracy theories as to why Barry hasn't been present in the last three pods are really going to be kicking off now. Anyway, while the people get busy with all of that, of course, Wednesday, another intriguing lineup of games. Honduras taking on Chile. Now, Chile, terrible record at World Cup finals, 13 games winless. This time around, though, they arrive after finishing second in South American qualifying, just 1 point behind the qualifying group winners, Brazil. And Bielsa's got them into a really attacking, dynamic side. I know this from all my experience watching Chile, not from notes that I've made before.
Yeah, I mean, it's difficult. I can't pretend to have seen a lot of Chile. I think what I'm
They've
finding...
They've got the top scorer from South American qualifying, Humberto Suazo. He's an injury doubt, but, you know.
I think what I'm finding difficult is, you know, I was sort of given a lot of really positive, you know, feedback on Paraguay before they played Italy, and sort of how they were going to be an attacking team, all those things. And all the South American teams so far, with the exception of Argentina and Brazil, who are the teams you sort of expect. Actually, that's not true. Mexico also. But, you know, aside from, I suppose, the three teams you sort of view as the classic sort of South American teams who are always at World Cups, I don't know. I've been disappointed.
Well, Honduras have had an absolutely rotten warm-up, getting beaten by all and sundry. And they've also got Palacios and Suazo in doubt for the game. So it does look like Chile should be the favourites for that. Rather more interest, perhaps, in the arrival of Spain into World Cup 2010. Their debut match is against Switzerland. Cue obligatory Swiss with mountain to climb style headlines, because the Spanish really brilliant. And that trashing of Poland just before the World Cup. And you saw the goals, presumably the 6-0? And Iniesta absolutely on fire. And there was some doubt about whether he'd be fit. Apparently he's going to be playing, and looking forward to that.
Yeah, I mean, I heard a lot of people saying that, a lot of former players saying that the worst schedule to have is to be the team that plays last, because it just nerves build and everything. But I'd say that's it's the opposite for Spain. I'd say their confidence has been swelling as they've watched everything that's gone before them. And I am very confident that they will demolish Switzerland, who are hopeless.
Right, Switzerland also got Alexander Frey and Valon Berami out, so that won't help now, will it? And then the other Wednesday fixture sees the host South Africa try to capitalise on their momentum from their emotional 1-1 opening draw with Thinks Mexico in the next fixture against Uruguay.
Yeah, I think up until the Brazil game today, that was probably still my favourite game of the tournament. I think both teams in that game really sort of had a sense of energy about them. And Mexico actually were very creative. The thing Mexico had was just seemingly a real sort of blunt edge right at the top. You know, very good at creating chances, very good at opening teams up, but no one who's a classic finisher. And you know, and South Africa just seemed to have a real energetic and enthusiasm running right through the team. And it'd be really, you know, I think everyone's sort of really pulling for them now, especially having seen how bad that France-Uruguay game was. I think everyone would like to see Mexico and South Africa be the two teams to make it out of that group, because they're the two who seem to at least play with a little bit of intent.
When you say everyone, of course, that's especially the French and
especially the French and the Uruguayans. Yeah.
Well, Owen Gibson, the Guardian's very, very own, if he reads his contract, Owen Gibson, will be at the South Africa-Uruguay match. I think he now joins us on the line. Owen.
Hi, James.
Ha, excellent. How are you, Owen?
I'm very well, yeah. A bit tired, but, you know, carrying on.
All right, well, a busy day?
Fairly busy day. I was down at, in Pretoria for the South African sort of pre-match press conference, and also running around trying to find out what Robbie Earl had been doing with his complimentary World Cup tickets.
Right, right, okay. Owen, it's going to be loud, that's for sure, against Uruguay. Amazing atmosphere, both during the match against Mexico for the South African team, but also afterwards. And that incredible atmosphere, do you think that's really going to... I mean, can they capitalise on that, or do you think the whole thing, there's a danger it's all going to go a bit flat?
No, I think they can. I mean, I think Pereira was quite interesting. Pereira was worried ahead of that big parade they had last week that, you know, they shouldn't be having a parade before they'd even kick the ball and certainly before they hadn't you know, played a match. But it does seem that that really sort of galvanised them, and it feels as though the sort of, you know, the energy that was around last Friday for the opening did them a lot of good. And in a way, in a funny way, it seems to have relaxed the South Africans, and I think it will be a great atmosphere tomorrow. The Lotus Versfeld Stadium is a sort of typical rugby ground, and it's very sort of high-sided stands. I was there for the Ghana match on Sunday, and the atmosphere was fantastic. It'll be even better tomorrow, I'm sure. Mm.
Looking forward to seeing Shabalala in action again. And any changes at all to the South African team, or just more of the same?
I think more of the same. You'll probably switch the left back. I think you'll probably start with the same team that finished the game against Mexico. As you say, Shabalala was fantastic, wasn't he? And it's interesting that the sort of domestic players who Pereira was able to work with for, you know, a period of 3 or 4 months quite intensively were you know, clearly at the sort of the peak of their fitness, on the top of their game, where some of the overseas players were obviously pretty exhausted, having played long seasons. And Stephen Pienaar was in the South African press today talking about how he was absolutely knackered, but obviously was going to press on, given that he's playing in a World Cup in his host country. And you'd think that probably would be enough to make him forget his tired legs. But Pereira was making the point that he played 27 matches, I think, for Everton in the last 2.5 months of the season, which is an extraordinary number. It just perhaps shows why some of the marquee players and some of the big names that we've expected to really sort of set this World Cup alight perhaps haven't done so as yet, because they have had such long, intense seasons for their clubs in Europe.
Yeah, indeed. Well, listen, it was an amazing atmosphere for the Mexico game, and that was just for a draw. If they were to win against Uruguay, it'll be something absolutely special. You're quite a lucky man to be going along, Owen.
Absolutely. I mean, I wasn't in Soccer City for the opening match. I watched it in Soweto, in a fan park, and the atmosphere was absolutely extraordinary. I think, as you say, if they do win and they do qualify, it will really sort of set the tournament alight, and everyone's desperately hoping that they do go through to kind of really keep the momentum going. And it's a public holiday here, so that's good tomorrow as well. So yeah, it'll be a fantastic day, particularly if they win.
Brilliant. A public holiday, but not for you, Owen. Magnificent stuff. Enjoy the game, and we'll speak to you soon.
Well,
there you go. If they win, are they going to win, Paul Doyle?
It's very difficult to call. I think that's the most open group, and any two of the four teams could go through. So, yeah, what the hell?
Paolo?
I'll say what Paul said.
Right, okay, because Uruguay didn't look that impressive against France, or
neither Uruguay nor France looked very impressive. It was one of those, you know, we had a couple of games like that in this tournament where you sit there for 90 minutes and absolutely nothing happens. So, you know, maybe Uruguay have got a lot more to show than they did in that game. I think South Africa certainly looked like they were perhaps a little naive at the back against Mexico. So, I think that there's possibilities there if Uruguay are going to get forward at all. But, you know, it'll be interesting.
Now, excellent. That's it for today's World Cup Daily. Many thanks to Paolo Bandini and Paul Doyle for being here, and to special guest producer Jason, you the listener, for doing the hard bit. And we will be back, if you'd like more of the same, tomorrow at more or less the same time. So see you then.
more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.